Warning, the radio broadcast you're about to hear was made by men and for men. It may at times seem a little rough around the edges, brash, and certainly not canonically approved by papal authority. But its content may indeed challenge you to become the man, father, or husband God has called you to be. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to another week of The Obligation. My name is Jason Murphy. So glad you are here. We had such a great conversation last week. Had my friend Tico Valario on with me, the Cuban-American Catholic. We were talking about the crisis of manhood. We were talking about the feminization of our church, feminization of our men, and the Martyrs Walk, a new event, new program that we are working on, which is essentially a special forces boot camp meets Ignatian retreat. We want to put men through a very grueling 3 days, spiritually, physically, and mentally, so that they can reach down inside of themselves and see what's maybe holding them back. You know, everyone has something in their lives, something that is maybe haunting them, something that is maybe pulling them away from what they're supposed to be focused on. Before we came on today, I was talking to our guest that's coming up, and you know, I mentioned knowing your enemy, and sometimes those enemies can lie within ourselves. So, as a military unit, it's vital for them to know their enemy and know the workings and the habits of their enemy. It is important for us to know our own enemies, and of course, the enemy, of course, is Satan, the big enemy of all. But within each of ourselves, we have some portion of us that our Lord certainly allows to take place so that we may choose him, so that free will may be properly exercised and choose the greater. It is my great pleasure to bring on my friend Joe Spano. He has been with us in the past. He is an important part of my walk. Him and Cesar Vasquez were part of Sons of Mary, which is still a morning ritual for me and for many out there, waking up at 5:30 in the morning and praying Our Lady's Psalter, the Rosary, the Most Holy Rosary. It's an early morning. It's a tough day. It's never really easy, but it's always worth it. And so Joe and Cesar started this apostolate last year. I was fortunate enough to run across them on an early morning fishing venture. And through that, I was inspired and decided that if I can get up early for fishing, I can get up early for Our Lady. So I've made some changes in my life, and those changes have been causing a ripple effect. And they've, you know, made many changes in my life, and I think others that we're gonna kind of talk about here. But Joe, he's just finishing up the United States Marine Corps boot camp out in Paris Island, and he is back in New Jersey, getting ready for his next assignment. And he is a previous Navy man, a lot of military history there. He's been around a long time, serving our government, serving our country. And he is a good Catholic gentleman, and my pleasure to know him. Joe Spano, welcome to The Obligation.
Thank you for having me on, Jason. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah, we just had missed you for the last couple weeks, 6-8 weeks, I guess. You've been on a boot camp out there, and I got to see your face the other day on there joining us for the rosary, and thought, man, I got to talk to you. I know you've had a lot of things going on in the past several months, you know, changes, you know, into the military, back into the military with the Marine Corps, and finding a lovely lady to hold your hand along the way. You know, for those out there who maybe didn't hear the first episode when I did bring you and Cesar on, you know, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm a Navy veteran. I joined the Navy just shy of 10 years ago. And yeah, I was in from 2014 to 2018 on active duty. I was on aircraft carriers on the Ronald Reagan, George Washington, and Theodore Roosevelt, where I wore a few hats. I did security forces for about a year and a half, aviation maintenance administration. That's like logs and records for aircraft. and 3MDC, that's shipboard repair, and several other duties while I was out there. Got to see a few continents, work with some of the, you know, finest men and women that our nation has to offer.
What was the longest period of time you spent out on one of the aircraft carriers?
Yeah, so I had two deployments. One was South America. That was about 5 months. We did training with the Peruvian, Chilean, and Brazilian armadas. And then my second deployment was out to the Middle East. We went to give ISIS a little hate and discontent. We kept them busy. So it was a 10-month deployment. And yeah, got to see places like Bahrain, Dubai, Singapore, Philippines, to name a few. Yeah. And that was an around-the-world tour out on the USS Theodore Roosevelt.
Okay.
So,
what was your job primarily while on board?
Sure. I was in security forces at the time. So that was kind of a dual role of law enforcement and security. So,
okay.
You know, security, when we're in port, we set up an entry control point, and you know, you got to make sure that the right people are getting on and off the pier.
Sure.
Yeah. So I did that. And then we have like an internal law enforcement function, you know, when different sailors and service members break the law, we have to hold them to account. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So tell us, you know, with the Sons of Mary, I mentioned, you know, some might not know what that is. Tell us a little bit about how that came to be.
Sure. So that's, you know, the name of our apostolate that we started last year. And, well, it came to be pretty spontaneously. You know, I had been in a few different rosary groups, you know, predominantly, you know, female, you know, because I was like, where are the guys at, you know, trying to see. I thought it'd be maybe like a 50-50 balance, but it seemed to be a bit more weighted on the female side. For a while, we had been kicking out the idea of doing a live stream and getting out there and actually, you know, showing ourselves public. Hey, we're praying the rosary too. You know, we'd seen a few other Catholic channels out there doing the same. So we said, you know what? We could do it too. But it was tough to nail down a time where everyone could get on, different time zones and things like that. Then we finally said, hey, we'll do it this way. We'll do it this week on, I think it was a Tuesday or Wednesday. And I happened to be the only one that showed up. So I had just fractured my elbow a few months before I was supposed to ship out from Marine Corps boot camp in a cycling accident. And so I was in a sling with one arm. I have my you know, finger on my computer and phone up on a tripod and just praying the rosary. Awesome. So Caesar must have seen me from that. You know, I think we had been friends, you know, through the grapevine. Once you're on Catholic Instagram, you end up finding everybody's profile.
That's right.
So he was on there, saw what I was doing, thought it was a decent idea. And after that, we were in contact and we decided to go live for the next one. Hey, we'll do a joint thing. Let's try that. And the rest, as they say, is history.
That's awesome. Yeah. Unfortunately, over the years, it seems, even for myself, you know, the rosary had just, you know, seemingly become just an old grandma kind of tradition. It's what old ladies did. It's what the little quiet, you know, ladies in church did before Mass or during Mass. My first experience praying the rosary with anyone in my family happened to me by grandmother. And I'm, you know, I was very thankful because it was nothing we ever did growing up. It wasn't anything I was familiar with. I was brought up Catholic, certainly saw rosaries, but also I grew up in Louisiana, so I knew about Mardi Gras. And I just thought it was maybe a fancier type of bead. I never knew much about it. But as I started in my younger 20s, you know, getting back to church, was able to, you know, start praying with her, and such a great blessing to have that time with her. And but really learning such integral parts of our faith, you know, the meditations and everything. And I still have her little crocheted rosary that I'll use on occasion when I do pray the rosary. I think if memory serves me right, you kind of had a similar grandma. Is that right? Was she an inspiration in your Catholic walk?
That's right. That's right. You know, through different parts of her life, you know, she was a bit more observant than others, but I have some fond memories of her praying the rosary on the recliner, you know, and one of my earliest memories, I think I must have been at some point in elementary school, maybe around 8, 9 years old. I remember my grandmother praying the rosary on the recliner, you know, just, it looked very like peaceful, it looked very peaceful. And it's just a fond memory I have of her.
That's great. Know? Yeah. My grandmother, she would fall asleep every night with her little crocheted rosary there on her chest. So it's a beautiful memory as well. So, well, it's great. And I'm glad we had that inspiration, you know, but you know, the old saying, behind every good man is a good woman, you know, especially a good praying woman. And I think that still rings true today. All right. So Navy out, and then the wild man is restless, decides, hey, I need more. You know, what called you back? What called you back?
Sure. So, in the Marine Corps, we have a term, esprit de corps, right? Mm-hmm. Camaraderie, getting after it with your brothers. And, you know, after 5 years of being out, you know, 2018 to 2023, I was going to college. I was working, I'd done a few odd jobs. I had a period of time where I worked in counterterrorism doing, behavior detection. So profiling based off of body language, very fulfilling. The Lord had other plans. I was laid off. So I decided to try to get some new skills in college, and, a Marine recruiter found me. He said, hey, you look like you were in the military. What's that about? And then we started having a conversation, and I was under the impression that I was too old to get back in the fight. You know, 27 is, you're like the father when you're down there. Cause you know, you have people that are, I mean, at 27, 10 years younger than me, you know, 17-year-old, 18-year-old kids, right? Just starting their journey of manhood, figuring out what life is about. And, it was a real blessing to be able to have that experience. Hey, 9 years and change. I was in Navy boot camp at that same age. Mm-hmm. And then I'm coming back all this time later, going back into another boot camp, a tougher boot camp, I could say, after having done both.
Sure.
And it's really humbling.
Yeah.
To go back, you know, you have to have patience because naturally, you know, maturity, it's not necessarily guaranteed with age, but I'd like to say if you do things right and you stay on the straight and narrow, you know, it should be coming along. Right. And so I kind of viewed things through a different lens, I guess you could say.
Oh yeah. I can imagine. Yeah. Going kind of that opportunity to exercise hindsight in real time.
Sure. You know,
in a situation like that and go through the exact same kind of, not the exact same, but a very similar instance. You kind of been there, done that, but in a different way. So, you know, the profiler was profiled. So, so while you had been a profiler, I guess this recruit for the Marine Corps, he profiled you and he's like, yeah, looks like what we need. So that's interesting. So I guess boot camp wasn't enough. I think you added a little bit of a twist to it. I guess before we talk about the twist, tell me about, you know, as a senior coming in there, you know, I'd like you to your point, guys coming in 18, right out of high school, troubled guys, 18, 19, 20, you know, you on the other end of the spectrum kind of going through, was there any preferential treatment or were y'all kind of just, you were all grunts? Like how does that go?
Yeah. So we were all recruits, right? Okay. There were small moments where I could say things, you know, things were maybe a bit different. I could notice, hey, we have a certain level of respect, but now it's back to recruit mode. But I have to say 99% of the journey, you know, hey, they have to treat me the same. And, you know, we have to guarantee that, right? It doesn't matter if you were a CEO before you were in, or you were working at McDonald's. Right. Everybody has to get stripped of whatever their previous identity is and was, right, in order to build you back up in the image of the Marine Corps. Right. We have God, country, Corps. And so some of these kids, as you can imagine, didn't have any values. They weren't taught, or the values that they were taught weren't the best ones. Right. Mm-hmm. These principles that they were living by or lack thereof. Yeah. So the Marine Corps has to come in and say, all right, we're going to start with a clean slate, excuse me. and show you how things are done, right? Speed, volume, and intensity. That's kind of what ruled the day every day. That's how we operate, right? When you're something as simple as walking from A to B, we have to get to the chow hall, right? We're over at the barracks. We're going to walk the chow hall with speed, volume, and intensity, right? Everything is go, go, go. When we eat, hey, you might have 30 seconds to eat and you still have food on your plate. That's too bad, right? So we have this concept of getting comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah, right? I love that. I love that term. I've been talking about that, being comfortable in your uncomfortableness. I love that. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So I guess behind the scenes in your file, you're known, you know, that you've got the Navy background, but does your drill sergeant know that?
So I'll point out a little thing here. So in the Army, they say drill sergeant, and in the Marine Corps, we say drill instructor, right?
Yeah. Ah, okay.
So no problem. But I could say it's kind of funny, right? As a recruit, when you go down there, there were quite a few people that would say drill sergeant in the beginning.
Okay.
And you get a pretty rude awakening. You think I'm in the army. Right?
Or if you're called a soldier, right? That's
It's like a big disrespect, right?
That's right. Yeah, I made that mistake a few times with a couple of Marines, and I've learned that one. So that's great.
But you go down there. I was older than some of my drill instructors, right? And when we were getting ready to have our dress uniforms presented and doing inspections in our service uniforms, because most of boot camp were in camis, in woodland camis, desert camis. That's our working uniform, or we're in PT gear, right? Getting after it. But towards the end, we started to, do inspections, get our service uniform and dress uniform together. Well, I need to have ribbons from my prior service. So it was very clear to everybody, like, hey, this guy's done a couple things, right? And I ended up having as many as my senior drill instructor when I was down there. Okay. I had 7 ribbons on my chest and he had 7 ribbons on his chest. Wow. And to give you a point of reference, when I was in back in 2014 in the Navy, you got a National Defense ribbon because of the era that you were serving in. And then I think after, we had that. And then we had our marksmanship ribbon. So you graduated with 2 ribbons on your chest. Whereas in the Marine Corps in this time, kids were just graduating with their marksmanship ribbon. So if they shot expert, marksman, or sharpshooter, you had that represented with a little shiny thing on your chest there. Okay. So does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. Was any of that used against you? Because I know everything can be used against you in boot camp.
Absolutely. So whether I made a big mistake or a small mistake down there, so this was the best the Navy had to offer. You were the best E4 in the Navy, right? And just for any listeners that might not be familiar with the military structure out there, we have ranks E1 all the way up to E9 for the enlisted rank structure.
Okay.
So E4 is where you really start to take on duties as a non-commissioned officer, right? You start to have people under your charge and more of a supervisory role. So that's another thing. In order to join the Marine Corps, right, I came out of the Navy as an E4 and I could have joined the Army, gone in as an E4. I could have joined back into the Navy as an E4. The Marine Corps says, okay, we see your experience. You'll get E2. Right.
Prove
so Marine Corps, exactly. Prove it. The Marine Corps is very much so not, we might not have these bonuses for you, right? We don't have this. It's not about what they're going to offer you. It's about what are you going to do for the Marine Corps?
Yeah.
Right.
Gotcha.
So it's a stark difference from the mentality of the rest of the branches and how they recruit.
Gotcha.
Right? We need a few good men. It's not, we need all the men. We need a few good men.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I mentioned a twist, you entered the boot camp there with a twist, with a little Spano around, right?
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So, I met the love of my life, out of all places, Uruguay, South America.
Okay.
Through the work we had been doing with this apostolate. Matter of fact, before the page was even formed, we were working off our personal pages, right? Praying the rosary. And through this thing called Instagram, we ended up reaching out to some people and some people ended up reaching out to us. And one day this lovely lady messaged me, told me a few things going on in her life and asked me to pray for her. And that's how my now wife and I kind of met each other. We met each other through Instagram, right? And I'm like an old soul, an old fashioned type. So it was a real departure to be communicating with somebody on that level. And then to go ahead and put my money where my mouth is and go out there to Uruguay, you know, spend time down there. And well, I decided to propose while I was out there. You know, a lot of old folks that I've talked to, when they speak about marriage, they say, you know, when you know, you know. And that was very much so the case to me. And when I knew and when I proposed to Daniela and I figured out we had all the big things, we had all the principles kind of in line, we decided to get the paperwork going. And so I had to reach out to a lawyer and a notary to get married from a distance. Okay. So that was our twist. I was actually able to get married while I was in boot camp.
Wow.
April 11th.
Okay. So when will you get to see her again?
So, right now I'm using up all my leave on, my 10 days of boot leave, and I'll actually be in vacation debt about 2.5 days. So we accrue 2.5 days of paid time off per month. So while I'm in combat training, MCT, we call it Marine Combat Training, down in Camp Geiger, North Carolina.
Okay.
I won't earn any leave for that month. But once I go to 29 Palms, I have about 6 months of job training for communications. I'll be racking up the 2.5 days again. So once I have a fair amount of leave in the bank, as they say, I'll take a trip back down to Uruguay and we'll get married in the Cathedral of Montevideo. That's the capital down there. Very so that, that is the current plan.
Awesome, man. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about natural marriage and, and also the sacrament of marriage, right? So Danielle and I have had conversations about, you know, about Caesar, right? About who controls the lay of the land. And, you know, the way it works is we needed a civil marriage first, right? We had to establish that foundation.
Gotcha.
Even though what we really want is the sacrament, we realized that we had to do things, you know, the right way, the civil way, I suppose, before we could get that sacrament, right? So that was the first step on our path. And I'm happy to say, you know, April 11th, we were able to seal the deal and make that happen. So the next step is, is receiving that sacrament because it's such a big part of a Catholic's life. I'm sure you can, can concur on that.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Well, that's great. Man, thanks for sharing that and congratulations once again. I think we're going to come up on our first break here. It goes by quick. I'm talking to Joe Spano and we'll be right back.
On January 31st, 2019, Carolina Catholic Media signed on Charlotte's first Catholic radio station, AM 1270 WCGC. By the grace of God, we celebrate the past 4 years and look forward to continuing our apostolic vision and mission to serve the Carolina Catholic community. We are evangelistic partners with our clergy, active parishioners, the fallen away, and the homebound. We are accessible to all Christians, agnostics, and atheists. With distribution of a wide array of content across 7 media platforms, there truly is something for everyone. During these past 4 years, Carolina Catholic has expanded to 7 media platforms that include radio, internet stream, mobile app, website, YouTube, social media, and e-newsletter. Nearly all local programs are available by podcast and video on demand. In the year ahead, we're committed to promote more local parish, school, and ministry events, more live broadcasts, and more valuable content that showcases our dynamic local Carolina Catholic community. Of all the Catholic radio stations in the U.S., Carolina Catholic is arguably a leader in locally produced programs. To continue our work, Carolina Catholic Media needs $15,000 in monthly funding to continue operations across our 7 media platforms. We are 100% dependent on your generosity. If you love what we're doing, please join us with a monthly tithe or annual gift. We have partnership plans available for parishes, schools, and ministries. If you own a business, you can be a program sponsor on one or all of our platforms. You can do a live broadcast of a special event with promotion before and rebroadcast after. On behalf of everyone at Carolina Catholic Media, we thank you for your past support and look forward to you joining us with the resources the apostolate needs to continue to evangelize the truth of Jesus Christ and our Catholic faith across the Carolinas. May God bless you and your family abundantly.
And we're back. Thanks for tuning in. Once again, you're listening to The Obligation. My name is Jason Murphy. Sitting down with my friend Joe Spano. Joe has, he's spanned the globe in all sorts of different branches of the military. And I wanted to talk to you, Joe, just a little bit about the difference. You know, having gone through, I know you're just kind of just getting your foot in the door with the Marines, but you've been through the boot camp with the Marines. You've been through the Navy boot camp. You know, let's talk a little bit about the differences there. You know, what kind of differences would one expect to see in those two different boot camps?
Absolutely. So, you know, right off the bat, the beginning of that process, of that transformation from recruit to Marine, it all starts with the yellow footprints, right? Very iconic
yellow footprints. Yeah.
Yes, sir. And so you step on those and it's at the position of attention, right? Your feet are at a 45 degree angle. And that's the beginning of learning, you know, basic drill.
Uncomfortable? Is that an uncomfortable stance at first?
Sure. If you lock your knees and you're standing out there like locked like a board, you're going to be down in a little bit, right? If you're not getting blood flow to your body, people pass out. Sure. So if you're too tense or nervous or things like that, you do a little damage, but in general, you know, you get used to it. You know, at first your feet aren't so conditioned, but Marine Corps builds you up and you get used to standing in that position for plenty of time, right? That's right off the bat what you're doing when you get off the bus down there at Parris Island, and then you start getting processed, right? You get stripped of your whole identity. They, you know, take away your civilian clothes. You end up getting a buzzed head. And you start your process. The Navy also shaves your head. They also take away your clothes. I would say everything the Marine Corps does is with speed, volume, and intensity, right? And that's something that we constantly have to prove day after day when you're down there as a recruit. In the Navy, you know, sure, you're definitely yelling and, you know, you're definitely being told what to do, but I can't say it's not as aggressive. Let's put it that way. It's not done with the same level of viciousness and lethality as the Marine Corps likes to instill in us. So yeah, sure. I would say that's a big difference right off the bat.
Okay.
Anyone
faint on the yellow footprints?
No. I think it was probably out of fear. You know, most people are like, oh, who are these people? What are they asking me to do? And I'm under military command now. Mm. How does that work?
How long are you on the footprints? Approximately, if you can say,
maybe 5 to 10 minutes.
Okay.
And the way it works is when you form up on those yellow footprints, I remember I was in the front of my column. Everyone behind me was in my platoon. And that's how they structure you. Everyone that's in that stick or in that column is a platoon. So right off the bat, you know, you're getting organized, you're getting assigned, and they have you come in and, you know, you write your platoon number on your hand in a Sharpie marker or whatever we had. And they inventory all your gear, which is just the clothes on your back and, you know, your identification and, you know, phone and charger, which, by the way, you don't see for 3 months. So as the process goes along, we have different phases. So in the beginning, you're in phase one. And so you're mostly in that green on green and camis that have no name and you know, you don't have the name tape, and then you don't have U.S. Marines on your chest.
Okay.
So that's something that has to be earned. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. So, in planning for the Martyrs Walk, you know, I was trying to go through some of the details of our program. There's going to be, you know, strict formation at the starting points of each day, and there's zero tolerance. And I imagine even more so, in the Marines, there is zero tolerance. But one thing I was considering, I was like, well, if the guys are going to get up and, you know, they're going to get up around, you know, 6:30, be in line formation by 7, then I'll probably need to get them some coffee ready. And then I looked online and I'm like, yeah, there's no coffee in the beginning, is there? I know you like your coffee. How accessible is coffee during boot camp, and when is it available?
So for the vast majority of boot camp, right? No coffee. When we start to go out to the field, then you get what we call an MRE, right?
Okay.
Because you no longer have facilities to eat, right? You're eating out there in the field, right? You're living out in the field doing different exercises, different training exercises and things. And so we get a plastic bag called an MRE that stands for meal ready to eat. Mm-hmm. Bunch of good food that doesn't expire for 20 plus years, packed full of calories and vitamins and things like that. So yeah. Depending on your platoon and your drill instructors, you may or may not have some coffee in there. They come with coffee, but you may not have coffee. So it all depends.
Okay.
For us, they left it in as a test. Right? They said they want to test your willpower, right? To see who's gonna touch the little two pieces of gum that are in there next to the coffee packet and things like that. So I didn't have coffee until the very end.
So is it an instant coffee you just mix with water or something?
Yes.
Does anyone ever take the grounds themselves and just try to use it?
So what people will do, right? They're trying to be stealth about it,
sure,
right?
Yeah.
Undetected. And they'll take the coffee powder and then they'll put it in their lip.
Yep.
And kind of keep it there while we're in the field, just as we're kind of hiking and things like that. So that's an old tip that people have been using probably for years and years and years, right?
I think there's a company I saw on Shark Tank one time, and I think they came out with some little, almost like the Skull Bandits, but they're caffeinated. And that probably evolved from that little sneaky trick there in the boot camp, I'd imagine, because they're both military guys, I think, now that I remember. So interesting.
Right.
So no coffee. So how soon, once you're in boot camp, how soon before you go out in the field?
Sure. So let's see. It's a gradual process, right? So our hikes give us some field exposure, right? You know, day hikes and things like that. And then eventually that all leads up, all our shooting and, you know, field exercises, everything kind of culminates, into basic warrior training.
Mm.
That's when we get like real field training, I would say.
Okay.
That's over in phase 3. So more towards the end. So
okay.
we have field exposure, but we're not in the field overnight doing overnights, camping out and stuff like that until basic warrior training.
Makes sense.
And then you go through that basic warrior training. That's several days long, 4 days long, if I call correctly. We have 4 days of basic warrior training where it's a culmination of getting beat down, you know, doing getting IT'd. That's intensive training.
Okay.
Where they have you do a bunch of exercises and stuff, and then they'll also simulate combat to a certain extent. They'll yell out something like grenade or aerial flare, and then you'll have to hit the deck. Mm-hmm. The deck is the floor. So you get down, you have your rifle, you're in, you know, full loadout with a Kevlar and everything like that. And so we get exposure during basic warrior training towards the end over in phase 3.
Interesting. So going through all this, obviously, you know, they're training you to be, I'm not going to say a soldier, but they're training you to be a Marine. They're teaching you how to use a weapon, teaching you how to defend yourself, how to survive. But there's also a big key element around the camaraderie and the brotherhood, right? I mean, there's more to just the physicality and the survival.
Yes.
So
yes.
tell me about that bond. You know, when does that bond really start? Because I'm sure when everyone gets there, everyone's nervous. You know how guys are, how everybody is. You know, when you're in a big group of people you don't know, you close in, you're insecure, you're questioning yourself, you're wondering if you're being judged, or especially when you've got a drill sergeant, you know, screaming at you the whole time. But at some point, there's a click. At some point, you know, that there's bonds that really start to take place. So tell us a little bit about that, because, you know, in our Christian life, in our Catholic life, it is so important for this brotherhood and this camaraderie. And it goes along with it. I mean, we talk about spiritual warfare, and we know we are the church militant here on earth. And I know, you know, as a practicing Catholic, you've probably, you know, you're thinking about all these things while you're there, you know, and this bond and this fighting for heaven and against the enemy. Just, you know, put in a few words, you know, kind of how that feels, how that clicks, you know, when you're out there going through that with another brother.
Sure. So, you know, from the outset, people are selfish. I have to say, you know, individuality and selfishness are intertwined in the beginning of boot camp, right? So stripping someone of their individuality is necessary, right, to get them to prioritize the team, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, I would say that it's a combination of things, right? One is group punishment. The Marine Corps is very fond of group punishment. When one of you mess up, everyone messes up.
Yeah.
It was the best of times and it was the worst of times. And it's through those worst of times that we face as a platoon. We started, by the way, we started with 60 men and we left with 53. So a few didn't make it along the way.
And that's got to kind of affect the platoon, right? I mean, that brings morale down, especially, you know, when one of the guys you might think is, hey, like, you know, a leader, or one of the guys, you know, this guy is, you know, he's, you're looking at him and like, man, this guy is who I want to be like. And then all of a sudden, maybe that guy checks out, or is it always the guy who maybe you kind of expect?
For the most part, I would say the vast majority were that case where it was, you know, the people that you would expect. Sometimes folks can't adapt to military life. You know, it's not for everybody. There's a reason why we need a few good men, and it's not
great point.
All of them.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Some people will have a small injury, right? And then they try to make it out to be something it isn't and go to medical. Mm. And, you know, really what some of these people might be looking for is a way out. And then other people do have legitimate medical concerns. So that definitely happens. Another thing that's common down there is getting pneumonia. So I knew one guy who was a great recruit and you know, really, really put out on the physical and, you know, mental side of things. And, you know, he ended up having to go to medical for pneumonia and needed antibiotics and time to actually recuperate. So he ended up getting dropped back in training. Mm-hmm. But that happens sometimes, you know, and sometimes you have to take a step back in order to take two steps forward, right? So that definitely happens. But more to your point about the camaraderie and when that forms. So group punishment definitely incentivizes that. Hey, you know, the beatings are going to continue until morale improves, right?
Sure. Sometimes
there's that element of it. And then another thing is the spiritual component. You know, when I was down there, I applied for a position called Catholic lay leader, which was essentially being the liaison between the 53 guys in our platoon and the Navy chaplain, the Catholic priest. So I was able to secure, you know, Bibles, and people that wanted to go to confession were getting marked down on the list to go see the priest,
right?
You know, to help people with their spiritual needs. And it also ended up coming, you know, these responsibilities ended up popping up in the way of, well, every night, you know, we're going to pray. We're going to do a nightly examination of consciousness a nightly examination of conscience. And we're going to pray the rosary. We're going to, you know, put forth our intentions because, hey, we had a rough day. You know, today we just did the gas chamber, guys. This was rough. We saw one guy, he refused to go in while I was down there, right? That happens. Or sometimes the platoon is just messing up, right? Making different mistakes. And it seems like, hey, we can't do anything, right? But hey, we have God on our side. And there's plenty of early church fathers and saints that have gone before us that had tough times too. And so that camaraderie was formed. You know, a large majority of the platoon was Catholic.
Okay. I believe that was my next question. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. And you know, there was a huge group of us. So having that opportunity to be Catholic lay leader and knowing that a lot of these people were baptized and maybe they had only been to church a few times that year, or they hadn't been to church in, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, right? Mm. Trying to offer them stability in the way of, just like we did with the live streams, right? Hey, every day at 5:30 a.m., we're there. We're praying the rosary. And so for my platoon, every night I was there, we were praying as a group, mentioning things that had gone right and gone wrong throughout the day. And, you know, how could we, you know, live in the footsteps of Christ? You know, a book that I was reading from down there, other than the Bible, was Imitation of Christ.
Mm, great book. Yeah.
Yeah. And just mentioning some of those teachings, you know, some of those behaviors that Jesus had, some of those actions, right? And how we can imitate them through this time at boot camp. You know, my boot camp was especially symbolic. I just wanted to mention this. For Lent, we literally gave up everything, right? Mm. We have very limited connection to the outside world, okay. Just through letters. And it all culminated in a crucible right around Easter, okay. Right? And it was beautiful. You know, the chaplain said, hey, if I had to go down to Marine Corps boot camp and go through the crucible, I'd want it to be hotel companies. That was my company, hotel company, and my platoon was 2029. So we had the great fortune of being able to go through things kind of in sync, right? Oh, hey, wow. if Christ can be on the cross and die for our sins, there's no reason I can't get through a crucible. It doesn't matter that I'm tired, I'm hungry, that I'm uncomfortable. I can push through this. So those were some of the main things that helped galvanize the platoon and help us start operating as a, you know, as brothers and as a team.
Awesome. That's beautiful, man. I think we're coming up on our second break. We're gonna have to jump off and take a few minutes, but I'm sitting down with Joe Spano, Navy veteran and new Marine, and we'll be right back.
Did you know that 90% of older adults wish to stay in their home as they age? Aging in place has many benefits. It tends to improve quality of life, which in return improves physical health. Also, retaining independence as we age is critically important to our mental health. Hi, my name is Meredith Dignan, and I am the president of Harmony Home Solutions and an active parishioner of St. Patrick Cathedral. We are your trusted partner for aging in place. We strive to enhance the lives of older adults and their families by providing premier aging-in-place and universal design lifestyle solutions that increase safety beautifully. Now is the time to get your aging-in-place plan in order with Harmony Home Solutions. Visit our website today at hhsclt.com. Again, that's hhsclt.com. Or give us a call at 980-220-8821. Again, that's 980-220-8821. We want to help you live an empowered and beautiful life.
And we're back. Thanks for sticking around once again. I'm talking to my friend Joe Spano. He is one of the most recent Marine graduates, Marine Corps graduates out of Paris Island, getting ready to fill some boots and get to work. Again, you know, Joe, thanks for being here. And more importantly, thank you for your service, you know, your services. You know, we're eternally grateful, you know, as individuals and as a country for men like you, because that is not something, you know, you hear about anytime, is not something you hear about very much these days. You know, we don't hear about heroic men very much anymore. So it is good to know that they are out there. I've shared, you know, one of my, I guess my, one of my Jasonisms is there's not a lot of us, but there's enough of us, right? And it's kind of like you said earlier, you know, the Marine Corps, they're looking for a few good men. They're not looking for all the good men, you know, looking for a few good men. And then sometimes that's all it takes. And we know throughout history, a few good men have changed the world. And we know, of course, if we go back to our Lord and his apostles, they certainly changed the world. But, you know, there's a quote that I can't pinpoint the origins of it, but it's one I'm very familiar with. And I think it can be related here, and it can be related, you know, within our faith. You know, if you're not willing to live for it, then you probably aren't willing to die for it. And I think that's something, you know, after hearing, you know, a good bit about, you know, the boot camp and some of the examples of other Marines and men that you've run across. You mentioned while we took a break, you know, Sergeant Major Tolles. You know, it sounds like he is one of those, you know, few good men. And I wanted you, you know, tell a little bit about, you know, Sergeant Major Tolles and kind of that impression he made that kind of is going to stick with you, you know, from a leadership and a man's man perspective.
Absolutely. So at the end of Marine Corps boot camp, we have something called Marine Week. And during Marine Week, I had the pleasure of being able to sit down with the rest of Hotel Company over in an auditorium. We got to speak to Sergeant Major Tolles, and he's the Sergeant Major of 2nd Recruit Training Battalion. Been in since 2001. You know, after boot camp, 9/11 went down, right? And he served during that time, you know. And thank you for your support, by the way, for those kind words that you mentioned. But I'm no hero. You know, there's a lot of people that have gone before me and really done the Lord's work out there, you know, during, you know, Operation Iraqi Freedom and Operation Enduring Freedom, right? The last 20 years, you know, people coming home with no legs, no limbs, PTSD, you know, sure, traumatic brain injuries and things like that. And, you know, and in my eyes, those people that, you know, that gave all themselves down there and really did the Lord's work, those are heroes in my eyes. So
absolutely,
I'm trying to earn my keep each and every day. And that's how I look at it. Right. There's a, you can't believe your own press, right? Mm-hmm. There's a danger in believing your own press or believing your own hype a sure little too much. So if I tell myself, hey, you know, I'm an average Marine and, you know, it's a constant battle, right? We want to remain humble as Marines and as Catholic men. There's this idea of the quiet professional. So that's something that Sergeant Major Tolles and my drill instructor has definitely instilled in us. One of the things that really that really stuck with me in my head was a quote from Sergeant Major Tolles that he gave during the Q&A, and it went something like this. We are one enemy's decision away from the next war, because right now we're in a peacetime Marine Corps, but we know that we have to train harder than our enemies are out there, foreign and domestic, to be able to head off at the pass whatever is brewing, right? And whatever will come, because, you know, it's just a matter of time, right? And so we have to have that mindset of discipline. We have to have that mindset of preparedness, and, yeah, it has to stick with us, and we have to earn it each and every day, because if we get lackadaisical, if we rest on our laurels, you know, things could change in a hurry, and we have to be ready to meet that challenge.
Absolutely. I mean, aren't there so many so many analogies and so much metaphor here on a micro scale? You know, you talk about, you know, we're at a peacetime from a military perspective. And I think we can bring that down to a micro scale here for each one of us on our spiritual walk. Because right now, you and I, we can sit here and we say, okay, we're at peacetime right now. You know, we're engaged in good conversation. We're preparing and doing this show. But, you know, this show is going to end here shortly, and we're going to go back to the duties of state. You know, I'm going to go down and, you know, my kids are going to be home, and we're going to have dinner tonight, and there's going to be, you know, perhaps with six kids running around, there's going to be some frustration. And then, you know, we're going to be kind of skirting on war, you know, and that's all within us. And that's what I'm saying. Like, we're at a peacetime right now, but I don't know if I'm getting a little transcendental here. I don't know, but, you know, if we look at it on a day-to-day basis, you know, we are at war. If we are Catholic men and we are practicing our faith, we know we are constantly at war. And we are not fighting against flesh and blood. We're fighting against principles and principalities in this present darkness, right? According to scripture. Sure. So we know it is ongoing. We are constantly at war. And that war is made up of little battles. And to your point, you know, we have to train harder than our enemies. Our enemies are working overtime. The enemy is working overtime right now, planning your next step, planning everyone out here listening to this show, planning their next step. We're not focused on them right now. We're listening, we're talking, we're engaging, but there is something out there. There is a trap set for us that the enemy is preparing right now. So if they're preparing, we have to be preparing. And in that preparation, it boils down to prayer. It boils down to silence of the soul and listening to God. It comes down to reading good, holy things, engaging in good, holy conversations. So I don't know. I can't help but tie those two together because that is where we are in today's world. You know, men are so distracted. I am so distracted. If we are not careful, we can be completely distracted from what is going on and what is being prepared for us to fall into. And it's so easy. The cell phone, the computer, the TV, the whatever, you know, anything and everything. And that's, you know, I wanted to just jump in. We're getting a little short on time, but, you know, that's kind of the crisis of manhood, the crisis, the attack on the domestic church. You know, if the enemy can take out the head, he can take out the whole. So we are the head, you know, whatever size of that domestic church it may be. It may be a single individual. Your domestic church is your friends, your family, your extended family, your church, you know, members that you go to church with. That's your extended family. That is your little world. That's your domestic church. For me, my domestic church is my six kids, my wife, my extended family, same as we get outside of these four walls of our house. So we have to be preparing. Absolutely. And so, you know, we've been working and through some efforts of, you know, lots of men out there that are actually out there doing the grind. You know, we're starting this boot camp, and it's just ironic that we're able to get together and talk about this. We're a week away from this kicking off of our trainers week, our kind of beta version of the Martyr's Walk. Caesar, who is, of course, a very good friend of yours and good friend of mine, leads the rosary, is, you know, kind of taking the reins since you've been in boot camp. He's a part of that. And several other guys, Tico with the Cuban American Catholic last week, and Rick from the Armed Catholic, Joe Sims and John Hughes, and even Daniel Vu from California, who organizes men's conferences, men's rosary marches. He's the Trad Cat Men on Instagram. You know, we've kind of pulled together and we're going to try to pull this off because we want to take what has worked in our military and bring it to a local level, a level that, you know, we can connect the spiritual side with the physical side and try to, you know, bring these guys together through this brotherhood. And, you know, we're super excited about it. Our main event is in August. And, you know, please God, at some point, you know, we'll have you involved to some capacity, whether you'll be going through or whether you'll be standing there as one of the big, ugly instructors. But you know, we're excited to lay it out. And it is basically, like I said in the opener, it is a men's boot camp meets Ignatian retreat. What do you think of that, Joe? You've heard a little bit about it. You've read up a little bit about on it. How does it relate, you know, from a perspective of a man who's been through two boot camps now?
Definitely. I'm fired up about it. You know, there is a big crisis out there in our culture, you know, where men don't have to really go outside their comfort zone, right? Yeah. It's a very comfortable existence. You can live, you can have your phone, you can have nice warm food. You can relax. You could live on easy mode if you choose, right? Yeah. You can be completely hedonistic and give in to all your vices, right? And you know, it just goes to show that if you don't live with intention, right? It's very easy, right? The barbarians are at the gate, right? Yeah. Or in our case, you know, Satan is at the gate, right? And right now things are nice. We're having this great chat, discussing things. But there's going to be a moment of weakness, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be a time where you know, the devil could pounce, could take advantage of a lapse in judgment or this, that, or the other. And to me, the Martyr's Walk represents 3 days, right, where men get to forge themselves, get to be uncomfortable, get to also grow, right, and learn. You learn a whole hell of a lot about yourself when you're uncomfortable. Right, when you're pushing past your limits, and there's not a whole lot of places out there that that make you do that, right?
Yeah, I recently heard a talk that was given by Father Ripinger, you know, of course, the famous exorcist. He was in Charlotte maybe a month or so ago at St. Thomas Aquinas, and I was able to listen to the replay and some words that spoke to me kind of, you know, along these lines. You know, he was talking about the fundamental failure of man is the inability and the lack of the knowledge of what sacrifice even means. You know, we don't understand that. As a society, as a culture, we have no clue what sacrifice is. You know, when's the last time, you know, someone's given up, you know, something, a parking spot, you know, held the door for an extra 5 seconds for someone. I mean, we're talking little things here, right? You know, skipping the dessert, you know, we could get into the penances and things like that, that of course, as Catholics, we know that's the time of penance and sacrifice, but really we need to enter into that all the time. And it's the same. It goes back to this conversation about, you know, training harder than our enemies. You know, we can't be fat, happy, and comfortable for 9/10 of the year, and then we take 40 days and act like we're going to go through this extreme boot camp and we're going to fix it, because most of the guys are going to fall off, you know, in the first couple of days. They're probably going to set their expectations too high, and they're just going to go back to what their habits are. And you know, I mean, habits are hard to break. I mean, it takes a lot of time, a lot of effort to break habits. But, you know, the other thing he said was that we have to lean into suffering. You know, those go together. You know, the inability to sacrifice and the ability to lean into suffering. You know, when do we put, I mean, myself included, when do we put ourselves into situations where we have to lean into that and absorb it and take it? You know, we flee from suffering. We flee from sacrifice these days. We've got to understand, you know, we've got to get our heads around that and realize what that is, because of course our Lord laid down the perfect sacrifice and the perfect model of leaning into that suffering, you know, for our souls. Yeah, a lot of it. Time goes by so fast. Joe, any closing thoughts here, brother? Close us out.
Yeah, absolutely. Learning how to carry that cross, right, is a huge thing. One big thing that the Navy chaplain down at Parris Island would mention, you know, I'd be able to attend Mass every Sunday. And one thing that he'd mention is that Parris Island teaches you how to love. And at first, you know, week one, I was like, well, what does that mean? And then he kept reiterating that phrase, and it started to make sense. And it's only through that suffering, it's only through that absence of everything, you give up something, you know, a penance or mortification, right?
Sure.
Where you're able to really appreciate what you have in your life. You're able to learn how to love a little bit better. And I can say that as someone that's come freshly back from, you know, recruit training down there in Parris Island, that's certainly the case. And if we're in a position to be able to show men how to do that, you know, in a 3-day workshop out there, right? That's going to help make that world a little bit of a better place. Yeah. And the idea is that, hey, you can't solve anything. You can't solve everything in a day or two, but you can spark something. You can spark something that can lead to a complete lifestyle change.
Absolutely. Right?
That's definitely possible.
That ripple effect. Absolutely. That's what we're going for. So if you're curious about that, you can find out more at www.themartyrswalk.com. We're also on Instagram, The Martyrs Walk. So, Joe Spano, pleasure as always. Again, you know, we wish you well. Your thoughts and prayers for your next venture, your next stage, and you know, I'm sure we will catch up soon, and maybe it'll be somewhere on the Martyrs Walk.
Likewise, Jason. Thanks so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thanks everybody for tuning in once again, and we'll talk to you next week. God bless, and esto vir.